Now, almost all of the Areopagus's judicial functions were transferred to the courts. The Areopagus retained some judicial functions, such as hearing cases of premeditated homicide, wounding, arson, and damaging the sacred olive trees. Later on, in 343, it would be given a new power to conduct special investigations into matters affecting the state. But really, the Areopagus now remains an impotent political body until the Roman occupation of Greece. It's interesting to note the reference to the courts in the Athenian constitution. The plural dikasteria is used, indicating more than one court. Now, until now, we've met in our sources only the Salonian Heliaea, which functioned as a court of appeal. It may not have been an actual court with a jury in our sense of the word, but it could have been the assembly meeting in some quasi-judicial capacity to hear appeals. We don't know much about the development of the legal system after Solon until we hear now about Ephialtes and the courts. And the fact that we're told there were courts plural in 462 means that at some point before Ephialtes and after Solon, the number of courts increased. Different cases came to be heard in them, not just appeals. And this was probably to try to keep pace with the increasing litigation. And out of that would come trial by jury. We know the Athenians created trial by jury, and it has to have been a product of the democracy. It's possible, if this isn't reading too much into what the Athenian constitution says, that Ephialtes himself created a court system with democratic juries to cope with the increase in court business after he'd stripped the Areopagus of almost all of its judicial powers. That's a minor heresy of mine. However, what we can say with certainty is that Ephialtes' legislation played a key role in the development of the judicial machinery of the classical legal system, the ancestor of our system. Ephialtes died in 461. He was supposed to have been assassinated, but we have no details about who could have been behind the assassination attempt. He might even have just died, and the idea of a conspiracy to assassinate him was put forward by his supporters. At any rate, in the aftermath of Ephialtes' demise, Pericles, who until now had taken something of a backseat role in political life, now rose to prominence. From now until 429, when Pericles died from a plague that devastated Athens during the second year of the Peloponnesian War, Pericles would be elected as strategos time and time again. In fact, he was elected as strategos 15 times, and he came to dominate political life. That era, as I said before, is called Periclean Athens. As a result of Ephialtes' legislation, Athens moved into a period of direct or radical democracy, with the people becoming sovereign in the state. All political powers were now in the hands of the assembly and the boule, and all judicial procedures, apart from just a handful, were now in the hands of the courts. The same people who attended assemblies were also jurors. That's why the year 462 is often labeled the Ephialtic Revolution, because of how the nature of politics and how the exercise of political power would change forever from Solon's time and Solon's property system. In the direct democracy, we see the rise to political power of certain types of non-noble speakers called rhetores, the Greek word for orators. Sometimes they're called demagogues, leaders of the people. And these rhetores will lead the masses in the assembly by their exploitation of rhetoric, often for their own political agendas. Direct democracy will also spread to many other poleis. And indeed, democracy, not oligarchy, is the most common form of political system in classical Greece, as we'll see. It's a different world politically, but not necessarily a better one. And we're going to dive into it in the next lecture. Thank you very much.